To me, I see AI as democratizing innovation, but I also see the convergence of AI and IP, where AI is really a disruptor. And that's what we're focused on. So AI can now be part of the inventive process.
Welcome to Ask More of AI, the podcast looking at the intersection of AI and business.
I'm Clara Shai, CEO of Salesforce AI, and I'm thrilled to be here today with the Undersecretary of Commerce for Intellectual Property and head of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, Kathy Vidal.
Kathy, thank you so much for being here.
I'm so excited to be here.
I mean, there's so many questions we can go into here, but just at the highest level, you know, AI in a great way has leveled the playing field for so much innovation. But in light of this environment, how do you ensure that we're providing the right protections while also maintaining healthy competition?
So it's interesting because you say it's leveled the playing field so much. That's one thing I worry about, right? So IP, to me, intellectual property, is a democratizer of innovation. Anybody can get a U.S. patent. Anybody can use that to attract funding and to bring products to market. And we're trying to use IP even more to lift more communities and bring more people into the innovation ecosystem. With AI, I'm interfacing with it in so many different ways, including on policy, to make sure that we're protecting it to the extent we should while not locking it up. But one thing I do worry about is it not being a democratizer. I worry about the few having all of the compute power, all of the data, and us not moving forward in a way that's positive when it comes to ensuring everybody has access to innovation.
And how can we address that? Is that something that the PTO is driving, or do you think that other government agencies and regulators have a role to play?
So it's both, right? It's government, but it's also industry. So I, because I care deeply about innovation and AI is just as important to innovation as IP, I'm leaning in across government. So I'm working with my counterparts across the Department of Commerce. I just had a meeting with NSF this week, the National Science Foundation. They're leaning in heavily on this, on ensuring that people have access to compute. And as part of that, entities outside of government are contributing. So it really needs to be a partnership because we need industry to really lean in and make sure that they're contributing, that they're giving credits, that they're giving compute power to some of these smaller enterprises so they can also compete and grow.
What is it like on the other side, you know, in public service? Are you surprised by how organizations work, either within the organization or across government agencies?
Well, the good news is I had never been in government before except a clerkship. And so I went in thinking, what are all the possibilities? And luckily, my counterparts were thinking the same thing. So even before I was confirmed by the U.S. Congress, I got to know my colleagues. We started working together. These are people across commerce. It's antitrust division of DOJ. Just people across government where I was thinking this is what I'm going to try to accomplish. And they were very like-minded in terms of what we were trying to accomplish. So I feel like we've just got a great team across U.S. government that if there's an equity somewhere around AI or IP or innovation or entrepreneurship, I just pick up the phone. I know the people, whether they're at the White House or elsewhere. Sometimes I talk to my colleagues and we talk together. So to me, it's just, I feel like I'm working with peers across all of government, which is just such an incredible experience.
That's really confidence inspiring because, you know, sometimes in the media, it tends to overemphasize what's not working in government. But you sound pretty optimistic.
I'm very optimistic. And I will say sometimes what they say is not working is working. And I have to tell the team, don't take it personally. They don't see what we're seeing. They don't know everything that's going on across U.S. government. And so I'm trying to keep the team lifted as we move forward and try and accomplish everything that needs to be accomplished.
I could see you being just the perfect person to do that.
Oh,
thank you seriously for everything that you do.
Of course.
Can you share specific examples of how AI is affecting the field of IP and patent law?
So it's interesting. IP was written into our U.S. Constitution, and it's in our U.S. Constitution because our founders knew that it was important to protect innovation in order to incentivize it, right? If you're going to spend all the money investing in creating a new drug, you need to make sure that you're going to get a patent, you're going to get a return on your investment.
Wow, what incredible foresight. I'm embarrassed to say I didn't know that.
Oh, yes, yes. And I think it was more about incentivizing then. Now it's equally about investment. Because if you don't have your technology patented, VCs are not going to want to invest in you if somebody can just steal your idea. So it's really built that way. Now, to me, I see AI as being something similar in terms of democratizing innovation. But I also see the convergence of AI and IP, where AI is really a disruptor. And that's what we're focused on. So AI can now be part of the inventive process. We did a request for comment. Some people think it can't yet invent. A lot of people think it can. And we tried to look at it from the perspective of, we want people in the U.S. to embrace AI. Right? We need to lead on innovation. We need to solve community problems. We need to solve world problems. So we're trying to create an ecosystem around intellectual property that encourages the use of AI, but ensures that AI doesn't lock up innovation. And I can explain what I mean by that. So for example, one of the things that we put out was guidance on when we will issue a US patent if somebody uses AI as part of the inventive process. And where we struck the line is it really has to be about the human contribution. Because if we let AI go off and invent and we patent all of that, you're going to lock up innovation.
That makes sense.
And I will say my counterpart in Australia, they said they went in their back room and had AI develop every possible chair. Now, you can imagine you could have AI do that. And then you could have AI patent all those chairs. And then all of a sudden, there's no more innovation in the chair space. Nobody can get a patent in that area. And nobody's investing in those chairs.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's all about investing and bringing products to market.
That's so interesting. So AI is being used in the inventive process. But then there's also a need separately to patent protect certain AI inventions.
Exactly. And we see AI inventions in two categories. We're actually coming out with new guidance soon, probably in July, on if you use AI, what kinds of things are we going to protect and not protect? And I see it in two ways. One is in the stack, right? There's AI inventions that are really about AI. They're really in the AI stack.
And then, like a new model.
Exactly. And then there's the innovation that's assisted by AI. So in the farm belt, there's a whole lot of innovation around AI and farming, right? In the Midwest, there's a whole bunch of innovation around medical devices and AI. We're seeing AI assist with innovations everywhere throughout the country. So what we're trying to do is look at both of those types of innovations and draw the right balance to make sure that we continue to innovate at the pace that we're innovating at, hopefully at a faster pace with more people coming into the ecosystem, and that we're able to get those products to market.
And so I love that requirement that you have around there has to be some sort of unique human contribution in addition to the AI in order for it to be patentable.
Yeah.
And that really aligns with something we talk about a lot in terms of having a human at the helm,
yes,
right? And having
yes.
these technologies be empowering and additive versus, you know, something that is not as constructive. So I guess one question I have is, given that AI can accelerate this innovation and invention process, it seems like there is probably, if you haven't already seen, probably will be an explosion of new applications. Now, are you using AI itself to help drive greater efficiency in evaluating applications?
So we are, but we're doing it very thoughtfully. So when ChatGPT came out, we were the first federal agency to immediately send a letter to our entire workforce, which is about 13,500 people, and say, not yet. Right? We don't want you feeding private information from individuals who expect us to keep it confidential into these models, into AI. And so it's not yet, but we want to adopt it as fast as we can in a responsible way. So that's what we've been doing. So one of the important parts of giving somebody a patent is determining whether somebody else has invented it before. Right, because we're not going to give you a patent if somebody else has already invented it,
right.
Or if it's obvious in view of something that somebody's invented. So we're now using AI to find what's out there. So that helps speed up the process and make sure we do a better job of finding what's out there. Another important process is we need to make sure that the patent examiner, we've had about 8,000 patent examiners, that they have the technical expertise to examine whatever the invention is. And so we're using AI to analyze the applications and get it to the right person in the first place to make sure that we're more efficient and that we have better quality. We also have an AI lab, which I love. So this is a lab where we can all go in and experiment with AI and think about use cases in the USPTO that we might actually want to implement. So I'm experimenting in AI, my team is, across the entire USPTO. Anybody who has a great innovative idea has the ability to go into a safe AI lab, work with the most modern technologies in AI, generative AI, and experiment around to determine whether there's a great use case that we can roll out across the agency.
That's so smart. I mean, AI is constantly evolving. And I would imagine, you know, upskilling those 8,000 patent examiners is no easy feat.
That we are doing that as well. We rolled out so much AI training. We're starting a master's course where we're getting people from top companies to come in and teach our examiners about AI. We just rolled out a Carnegie Mellon 23-part series on AI for the entire workforce. But you're right, we need to upskill everyone because AI is everywhere.
That's fantastic. Tell me about these 8,000 examiners. Where do you find them and what types of backgrounds do they typically have?
So it's every background that we need to examine, whatever the technologies that we have in front of us. Most of them are remote. And I will, just to plug, we're hiring and we've removed our hiring limits. So we will hire anybody who wants to come in, who's qualified, who can do a good job examining patents, because there are so many applications to be examined. So some of these are people who were in tech companies, maybe they got laid off and are looking for a job. Sometimes it's a second career. We hire aggressively from the military because they've got great technical backgrounds, and also right out of school. When somebody comes out with an engineering degree, a good chunk of the examiners that come on board right after engineering school, or they get a science degree or some technology that relates to the applications that we're seeing.
And what a great career, but also for people who just want to take a break from what they're currently doing, what a great way to give back and be a public servant.
Yeah, they're phenomenal. I mean, the work that they do is incredible. We give them all the resources that they need, and they can work from home, or for military spouses, they can work, and then if they move duty stations, they can continue to work for us. So it's such a great role.
Well, it's good to hear that the USPTO is high tech in how you deploy your teams.
Yes.
So with initiatives like the Council for Inclusive Innovation, maybe you can talk a bit about that. How do you think AI can be leveraged to enhance rather than detract from, you know, the DEI conversation?
So I love that. So the Council for Inclusive Innovation is not just DEIA. So it definitely has an element of that. It's really about bringing more people into the innovation ecosystem. So it's about inclusive innovation, but not just based on demographics in terms of race or color or, you know, whether you're a man or a woman. It's about rural communities. It's about our military. It's about retirees. It's about who is not fully participating in the innovation ecosystem. So with that, we do everything from developing programming for K through 6 to expose children to the ideas of innovation, entrepreneurship, intellectual property. We're going to hopefully work in AI to that as well. Everything from there to teaching teachers across the nation to teach this to the whole ecosystem, to reaching out to people in colleges and beyond. And as part of that, we just released a National Inclusive Innovation Strategy. So the first ever for U.S. government to release. And we're really focused now on implementing that strategy, as well as implementing the National Entrepreneurship Strategy, which we released at the White House a couple months ago. And the whole gist of all of that is the U.S. needs more innovation. We need innovation to create jobs and communities, to put food on the table, to solve community and world problems. And the only way we get there is by bringing more people into the ecosystem. And in fact, the numbers say that if we can quadruple the number of inventors, we can increase the GDP by $1 trillion. Now, I will say at the intersection of AI, we also did a report in Nature. We did a study in Nature in January that said that if you bring more women into the inventive teams, you actually increase not only patenting, but the value of the patent. So at the intersection of AI and biotechnology, a patent is worth about $11 to $13 million more if you have a mixed team where women are equally represented with men than if you just have men. So it's about creating more innovation, higher quality innovation, and bringing that innovation to impact.
That's incredible. Everyone wins.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. And I love hearing that you're engaging with schools and with teachers. Now, we have a lot of business leaders that tune into this podcast. Yeah. How can they contribute?
There's so many different ways to contribute. I will say follow us, because we're not only engaging with schools, we're also trying to get into libraries across the nation. So whether your kids are at a school and you want us to bring our resources, our Camp Invention, into your schools, if you know of community libraries where we could bring our resources to ensure that people in your community have access, that's fantastic. If you don't know how to contribute, just email me. I'm at director at uspto.gov. If you have something to contribute, whether it's AI expertise, whether it's just leaning in and helping us get into more communities and before more students, before more Americans, we're happy to find a path for you.
I love how accessible you are. And I love how clearly actionable this is. I think we live in divisive times, mm-hmm. but here's a call to action that we can all unite around, right? Who wouldn't want our country to create more inventors and for those inventors to come from all kinds of backgrounds?
Absolutely. And I will say it's not just the U.S. that's leaning in on this. We're, from my perspective and what I've heard from other countries, is that we're leading when it comes to our initiatives. But I just got back from Korea and I met with China, Korea, Japan, and Europe. And the topic was on small to medium-sized enterprises. All the countries, all the regions of the world are really keenly focused on this. They realize how important innovation is to their economies, to jobs, and to economic prosperity.
And are you finding that, you know, the various, your various counterparts, you all are converging on similar policies, or do you think the U.S. is unique in how we approach IP and patents?
So I think we've got unique programs when it comes to bringing more people into the ecosystem, but we're sharing, right? We want to share with like-minded, we want to share with other countries. I will say where I do think we need to converge our policies is around AI specifically. So we're working at the intersection of AI and copyright. You know, when you train on copyrighted materials, what should we do there? What about the output of AI for mimicking somebody's voice or likeness? Everything on the copyright side to patents, there's so many more issues we need to solve for, including because with AI, so many people can invent at the same time, or you could create other ways of blocking innovation. So with all of that, we are leaning in heavily and quickly, but I'm talking to the other countries and you're wanting them to come along with us. We'll take their feedback if they think there's better ways to solve for the things we're solving for, because we really need to harmonize, because innovation just doesn't stay in country borders, right? If you're going to be successful as a company, you're going to have to practice outside of the U.S. as well. And we need to make sure that the right structures are in place to protect innovation, incentivize innovation without locking it up so that it stops inventive process going forward.
Right. I would love to double click on both of those things that you just talked about. What are your views on copyrighted materials being used to train models?
So we are going to release our views somewhat soon. The Copyright Office is going to put out a report soon on the back end, right, on what comes out of AI and whether you're mimicking somebody's voice, et cetera. So on that, we really do need federal legislation. Right now, it's a patchwork of state law that applies there. When it comes to the training side, that's something harder to solve for. It's something where we did a request for comment with the Copyright Office. They issued it. We've heard comments, and we're trying to solve for it in a way that really threads the needle, where certainly we want people to be able to train to innovate on the data. At the same time, we need to respect certain industries and not demote them because now their information's being trained on and people can compete with them based on their own input. So it's really a matter of striking the balance. We've not landed the plane on that. It's our job as, you know, I'm the advisor to the president on everything intellectual property. And so it's our job to figure that out and to advise the president on what we need to see nationally and what we need to see internationally, and then for us to also talk to Congress about what bills we may need to see in that area. But it all needs to be from an international lens. So we're also talking to UK and other like-minded countries on how they're approaching the same issues.
And you feel like we're tracking toward having some sort of resolution?
All of that, the advice should all be given within the year. It's just a matter of the timing on it. We're trying to move as quickly as possible, but we need stakeholder input. We don't just want to come up with something arbitrarily and then have unintended consequences. So we're really sifting through so much data. We're going to have a listening session soon on the name, image, likeness, you know, the output of AI, to really hear from stakeholders on our ideas, how we think we can move forward, and hear how it's going to affect them on a daily basis. How is it going to impact jobs? How is it going to impact your ability to create and to innovate?
Right. What about the second item that you brought up in terms of, you know, AI allowing many people to start to invent similar types of IP?
So there's a concept in IP related to simultaneous invention, and it's something that we can consider when issuing a patent. So if 500 people invent the identical, you know, EV, say, and they all do it right around the same time, we have some discretion not to issue a patent, not to say if you happen to be the one out of the 500 who got to us first, but there was simultaneous invention, we could say, look, that's an indicia that was obvious, that all these people invented it at the same time. So we need to think about that. Like, we need to think about about policies related to things like that. We also need to think about that AI can generate, I told you they could generate all of these ideas, such as the chairs,
right,
and they could patent it. But even if they don't patent it, they could release it out there into society. And now all of a sudden, when we go to look at whether a new chair is new, we would find that and say, oh, it's not new. And so we want to make sure we're striking the right balance to make sure that we're not locking up innovation either through all this simultaneous invention that could happen if so many people have access to AI, or through somebody just releasing ideas out there into the public sphere.
You know, that latter point you make makes me think of what Meta is doing by open sourcing their state-of-the-art models. Mm-hmm. Do you have a view on what's happening in that space?
It's complicated, right? So in commerce, we are working on certain things related to open sourcing models, model weights, all of that. And there's complications there because we don't want people to misuse them, right? The whole issue with AI is we want it to, I've been focused on opportunity. That's where I lean in. That's where the USPTO leans in. NIST, Standards and Technology within Commerce, is focused on risk. And we've got others focused on the risk side of things. So I think whenever somebody talks about doing that, we need to think about all of that. How do we empower the people that we want to be innovating, but not put certain tools into the hands of people who are going to misuse it?
And that's a dialogue we have often too, right, is, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Exactly.
Especially with elections coming up.
Exactly.
For tech companies like Salesforce, but also our ecosystem of software partners, and even for our customers, some of which are tech companies, some are not, how should they be thinking differently about the IP application process in this AI era?
So I would say that they don't necessarily need to think about it differently, but I would say that because this is a new technology and there's so much innovation at the intersection of AI, one of the things we try and do, and I think this gets more into the minutiae, but one of the things we try and do is invite in companies to do a session with our patent examiners. And so, for example, if you're an AI company, we'd love for you to invite our examiners in to talk about the work that you're doing so that we can educate them. So we've got different ways of our examiners interfacing with companies so that they can learn more and better understand the technology in the marketplace.
Just incredible. I was reading your bio, and I didn't know this. We met in
and we've known each other forever.
Yeah. Well, we met in 2011, yeah. Fortune Most Powerful Women Conference. I still love it. It's like holds a special place in my heart. But I was reading your background. You started your career as an engineer in software engineering and AI.
Correct.
At GE and Lockheed Martin. Then you move on into law. And then when we met, you were this high-powered IP litigator, one of the best in the business. And then now you lead the USPTO, which is probably one of the most interesting times in history to do so.
It is definitely the most interesting time to do so, especially with AI. Absolutely.
And how did all of this happen? Like, was this part of your initial plan, or did it just work out?
So I never have a five-year plan. Like, I know you go on interviews to say, what's your five-year plan? What's coming up? I never do. I just always lean into what I'm doing and try and do the best that I can do at it. So love engineering, love science. I took organic chemistry over the summer for fun. I didn't even get credit toward my degree. Just love it. And at some point, I realized I also love the law. And so you merge those two together with being a patent litigator and then helping startups with their IP portfolios. And then at some point, I got an email from the White House saying, can we talk? And here I am.
Did you think it was legitimate?
I did, because about a year and a half before then, somebody said, would you serve if called upon to do so?
Wow.
And I said, I'm super happy with what I'm doing now. I mean, the life we had, the Fortune Most Powerful Women, all the great things we were doing, including for lifting women.
Yeah.
I just felt like I was having an impact. I loved what I was doing. And so I said, look, I'm not going to lobby for it. I'm not going to do whatever work needs to happen. But I thought about the whole dynamic around the world, the competition with China, you know, just the importance of IP to the ecosystem. System and lifting communities. And I said, of course. You know, my dad served in the Navy for 20 years. Of course. If the country wants me to serve, I'll serve. And they just took it from there.
That's incredible. I can't tell you how much better I sleep at night knowing someone as smart and as committed as you is helping protect our nation's intellectual property.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
On a personal level, are there certain areas of AI innovation that really excites you? I mean, given that you started your career as an AI engineer.
So that's a hard question. I will say what I think is most pressing for the world is climate. We need to innovate more in the climate space, and we need to get more of those innovations to reality. And I think you need to look no further than the last year, where we had the hottest day on the planet, where every place I went around the world, there were fires, there was flooding. We've got major issues right now with climate. We're getting more turbulence on planes. I don't know if that's caused by climate or not, but I'm very worried about our climate and the increasing pace at which we're seeing demolition across the globe. So if we could use AI to solve for some of those issues, but make sure that we invest in them and get them to market, to me, that would be a huge win for the world. Now, beyond that, I love everything about inclusivity, right? I want to lift people. I want to give people the tools to be successful, to be excited about their lives, and to be able to contribute. So from my perspective, just being able to get out there and give people the resources, the training, the information so that they can all fully participate in society, that gets me really jazzed up.
And you're, sounds like you're flying all around the world to be able to do that.
Correct.
Are there ways you're using AI to make your life better outside of work, or ways that you're considering using AI?
So one thing that I thought about is a lot of the work we do is trying to figure out how we communicate with the public in a way that the work that we're doing is going to be understood and well-received and with the intention that we put into it. So that is an area where I would love to use AI to run it against things I've said in the past, our thinking process in terms of the policies we're developing, to see if it could better adjust the way we communicate.
You have such a fascinating career trajectory. What advice would you have for someone who's just starting out?
So my advice is just to really lean in hard on things that you care about and do the best job that you can. I mean, that's what I've done from the beginning. When I litigated patent cases, I would always go to Stanford and get a book on whatever the technology was and study it so that I would be the most knowledgeable on that topic. So that's the approach that I took when I was coming up and learning to be a litigator and learning to be an engineer. I would say that nowadays I would really incorporate AI into all of that. I would find ways that I could use AI. I would use things such as the USPTO's AI lab to experiment around to see how I could do my job better with the use of AI.
I think that growth mindset is more important now than ever.
Oh, I completely agree. And especially with AI, that's something I would study no matter what field you're in.
Great advice. So we touched on education earlier, and I think there's a lot of questions about, you know, what skills will be needed in the future. What's your view on how we should be, you know, adapting our education for kids to succeed in this AI era?
So I do think we have to introduce it early, and that's why I'm really excited. I talked to NSF about this week on, is there something we can do to collaborate with all the great work that we're doing at the USPTO to create footprints throughout the entire country, right? Like I said, we're in libraries. We're almost in 100 libraries across the country. In our schools, like how do we bring the AI into the teachers in a way that's methodical through mechanisms that we already have? So I do think it's important to educate early, because when you educate early, it becomes common sense, right? When you wait to learn something later, it's much harder to assimilate it and really to use it. And we need to think about AI as a tool that everybody has for anything that they're doing. So I really believe in early education and strong education, and then making sure that we continue that, including in ways that are not traditional, right? Through trade schools or through other mechanisms. And I love that so many of the larger companies are offering free AI training. I think that's important. And I would just advise anyone who's in any job, like you're going to need to know AI to be the part of the workforce of the future.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, I really believe everyone needs to write a new job description.
Yes.
And to keep updating it, because the AI isn't static. And to your point, I mean, I'm really proud. I just got the stat that over 1 million AI badges and certifications have been earned by our Trailblazer community, members of the public, using our free online learning
platform. I love that. And the badges are a really great way of people having a credential where you don't have to go to a four-year school, right? I think that we've got to be more creative about how we educate our workforce going forward.
Yes. And at the same time, we have to evolve our four-year schools and K-12
Correct.
Education.
Correct.
Yeah,
Correct.
Everything has to be reformed. Well, what other questions and topics do you think that should be top of mind for business and technology leaders?
So it depends upon where you sit in the ecosystem. I hope that those with the power are really thinking about the country. I know that when we get them behind closed doors, when the president asks for commitments, people step up and do what's right for the country. I know big companies need to compete, but we need to think about, you know, how do we support the next generation? How do we support startups? And it's just so great that so many companies are leaning in on that. So really excited about that. For smaller companies, we're going to try and make sure they get those resources, whether it's through NSF and the work that they're doing with the private sector, because it's something that we all need to focus on. And everybody, I would say bottom line is, I really want to focus on the trust side of things, that in order to innovate, people have to have trust in AI. And so that's something that we're really heavily leaning in on. And I hope the big companies can play a role. And I hope the smaller companies can find the resources to make sure that they can adopt AI in a trustworthy way.
Well, you have our full support. Trust happens to be Salesforce's number one value. And the very first thing I thought you might like to know that we built in the AI platform was our Einstein Trust Layer.
I love that. And I'll tell you one thing that we're doing is we're doing a Kaggle competition now where it's limited to the IP space, but hopefully it'll be broader than that, where we're trying to find a way to reverse out of AI Boolean logic. So people can have trust in the results to say, had I just entered this Boolean logic into the system, I would have gotten the same result. So we're leaning in heavily on trust as well.
Fascinating. I love everything that you're doing. Thank you, Kathy, so much for your inspiring leadership across both private and now public sectors.
Thank you, Claire. Appreciate it.
What an incredible conversation. Three takeaways from me. Number one is that we can all rest better at night knowing that the head of our U.S. Patent and Trademark Office started her career as an AI engineer and deeply understands the technology and what's happening. Number two is that there's actually two different types of AI in the patent process. One is using AI in the inventive process for non-AI IP, and the second is actually patenting AI IP, such as a large language model. Last but not least is there's a big focus in USPTO around upskilling, both their own teams of 8,000 patent examiners, as well as engaging in K-12 education to help schools, libraries, and teachers, and doing so in an inclusive way. That's all for this week on the Ask More of AI podcast. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts and follow me on LinkedIn and X. To learn more about Salesforce AI, join our Ask More of AI newsletter on LinkedIn. Thank you and see you next time.